Blanton, I keep referring him as, to him as the new fellow in Pinellas County. But actually, he's been here almost a year now, so I'm not sure we can say he's still in the honeymoon stage, but just kind of sort of coming out of it. And he comes to us from the Orlando area, where he was very instrumental in solving some of the transportation problems over there in the middle of the state. And what makes him so valuable, I think, for our community is that he hasn't been here for 20 or 30 years. He can take a big, broad, realistic, and visionary view of how we do begin to move ourselves out of the congestion and clogged highways that we find ourselves in, not just here in Pinellas County, but throughout our Tampa Bay region. And so for that reason alone, I look forward to working with Witt and to embracing some of his new ideas as I have begun to learn about them. And I hope that you will too. So please be respectful. Please think about what he has to say. And let's hear from Witt Blanton, our new MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization, PPC organization. So Witt, come forward, please.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here. This is my first time ever at any kind of Tiger Bay event anywhere. So I won't say be gentle, but I'm pretty sure my honeymoon will be over if it did exist, in fact. I am new to Pinellas County as a resident, but I'm not new to Pinellas County in general. I spent a good part of my career as a consultant working for the Pinellas County MPO, for Pinellas Suncoast Transit Authority, dating back to 1989. So I've kind of been in the game a little bit over here for a good long time. And I couldn't believe when this job came open, because I wasn't interested in just becoming an MPO director. I had a very successful consulting practice. I had a good home that I loved in Winter Park, where I raised my daughters and still have my wife there for a little while longer. And I wasn't really looking to change and move. But when I saw what the legislature did and what the community did by creating a unified organization about countywide land use and countywide transportation, I couldn't resist. And I applied at the last minute on the last day that the application was due. I kind of gave a passing reference to my wife that I was interested in this position. And then when I got down to being one of the finalists, we had to have a real serious conversation. And I'm really thrilled that it worked out the way it has. It's been almost a year, and I'm still learning every day. And I hope to continue to be learning 10 years from now. So let me begin my remarks, and let me start with this name, because Commissioner Long introduced us as MPO and PPC and all the acronym soup. And we really felt that we had to change our identity, because in 2014, the legislature approved a special act creating a unified organization with a 13-member governing board to look at countywide land use and countywide transportation in an integrated, well-thought-out, well-coordinated manner. And it's something that I've been working on in my career for almost three decades, and it was just a wonderful opportunity to seize upon that. But it really meant that we had to rethink and reevaluate how we operated, how we functioned, because the Pinellas Planning Council has always been sort of perceived and had a mentality of being bent on enforcing and regulating the countywide plan and countywide rules and telling local governments, thou shalt not do what you want to do, thou shalt not be too flexible. And that era has largely passed. We've had a number of changes with growth management in the state. We've had a number of changes with a variety of local government policies. And I think that was an era that needed to maybe move on. And we needed to elevate and become a more strategic, high-level, countywide, multi-jurisdictional organization with leadership responsibilities. The MPO, on the other hand, had always been a very instrumental organization in moving Pinellas County forward, because it had dollars to bring to the table to advance transportation projects. But the MPO for, again, about 40 years was a department of Pinellas County Planning Department. a division within the county planning department. And there was a lot of confusion, and our agency still to this day gets calls for, how do I get a swimming pool permit? How do I put up a fence? We're co-located with the planning department. My badge says Pinellas County on it. Our voicemail is an infomercial for Pinellas County, and yet we're an independent agency, an independent appointing authority here in the county. So we really felt like we needed to rebrand, and we chose the name after a lot of work and a lot of hard thinking of Forward Pinellas, because we are about momentum, we are about movement, we are about moving this county forward in a number of different ways to rethink the role of transportation and land use to guide growth and development. So I'm really pleased it became official this week, and we will start branding and getting our information out there. So our job is really to put the pieces together. We don't produce anything at Forward Pinellas other than hopefully good decisions. Our job is to build consensus and then really match land use and transportation together. And I put together a mission statement based on all the conversations I had with the local governments throughout this county and various stakeholders and individuals in the first couple of months I was here. And it's a simple mission statement. We will provide leadership to align resources to achieve a compelling vision for Pinellas County, our communities, and our region. And that's really key, that we have what I call vertical alignment, so that every local government in Pinellas County can see their role and how they fit in this county, and the county can see its role and how it fits in our greater region to sustain and encourage quality economic development and quality transportation options. When I got here, I took a hard look at the long-range transportation plan, which is one of two foundation guiding documents that we have that guide our actions, the other one being the countywide land use plan that we just adopted this past year. But I want to talk a minute about our long-range transportation plan. This is a real picture I took in North Charleston, South Carolina. And I think it's instructive that we spend 100% or almost 100%, about 99% of our discretionary funding that the federal government allocates to us by population on highway capacity. And there's nothing wrong with that. We need highway capacity to function as a region, and we've needed the projects that we've put those dollars to. In our long-range plan, we're allocating, and this isn't the full amount of these projects, but we're putting about $260 million towards the Gateway Express, which is a toll facility to link US 19, and the Bayway Bridge, the Bayside Bridge with the I-275, with the US 19 interchanges going up into Pasco County, and the Gandy Boulevard corridor. And we're matching dollars by the Florida Department of Transportation. They have the largest share in these projects, but we put our money towards these projects to move them faster so that construction is happening now and in the next couple of years rather than 10, 15, 20 years down the road. But when we are done with those projects, we're left with precious few roadways to widen or build or expand, particularly state highways in Pinellas County. We have allocated, ever since I've been involved with the MPO, going back to 1989, $0 to build and advance public transportation. And generally, the argument has been, well, PSTA has a dedicated funding source. They have a property tax revenue, and they should be able to fend for themselves. And I think to a certain extent that is true in terms of maintenance and operations of their fleet. But the world has changed pretty dramatically. We no longer have congressional earmarks coming in, and that's a large reason that PSTA has a newer bus fleet as of about 15 years ago, and now those buses are aging. And there, it's now a much more competitive environment, not just for transit, but for transportation in general. So we have to really think about how we as a county pivot to have a little bit more balance in our transportation spending to develop those options. And I say that really as clear and carefully as I can. I'm not advocating that we stop building highways or constructing the projects that are in our pipeline, but that we have to have a balance, and we have to do a little bit of a pivot and shift. And where that pivot occurs is something that I'm really excited to begin having a conversation with the community. The other, we get about $3 million a year. It's really not quite $3 million. That's the assumption. We get about $1.5 to $1.75 million a year for what are called alternative transportation modes. And that money is used typically for sidewalks and bike facilities and some other types of projects. And there's not a lot you can do on a year-to-year basis for that. If we wanted to complete the Pinellas Trail loop, for example, two critical gaps, that $3 million annually would take us to about 2040 to complete the gap in the Pinellas Trail, because that's north of about $30 million. So we're dealing with a financially constrained situation, and I got to tell you, I've never worked in any community, anywhere in the U.S., as a consultant or a government official, where we didn't have a revenue shortfall, where we didn't have way more needs than we had projects and the ability to fund those projects. And frankly, that's okay, because our job is to set priorities, and our job is to figure out what's the best bang for the buck for our community and what's going to help everybody build wealth in this community. And I really mean that. Our job as planners is to build wealth in our region, in our community, and we build wealth through transportation accessibility. And we have to protect and preserve the network that we have that enables that wealth to occur, both individually and for the public. So where do we grow and where do we redevelop? And that's the real challenge here in Pinellas County. I never want to ever be quoted as saying we are a built-out county, because it's just not true. We don't have much vacant land, but we are in a redevelopment mode, and that's very different from saying we're built out. The reality is that we have a lot of capacity for development if it's done in the right way, in the right location, with the transportation network to support it. And there's a map of Pinellas County on the left. I know you can't see the details of that, but we have identified areas of potential growth and areas that can't grow and can't change. And so we won't grow in the beach communities generally, at least not with permanent residential population. We won't grow in the coastal high hazard locations. How many people think we're going to have significant increases in density in Safety Harbor, in Dunedin, in Tarpon Springs? It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen in Gulfport. It's not going to happen in many of our neighborhoods in St. Petersburg. But we can grow in the US 19 corridor. We can grow in the Mid-County Gateway area. We can grow our population in Clearwater and in large portions of St. Petersburg. That's a sign I took that in Winter Park. I come from a very contentious city when it comes to growth, where anti-density signs are pretty common. Now I want to highlight, this is my only geekish, wonkish map that I'm going to show, a little bit of data for you, and I know you can't see it, so I'll walk you through. But I recently had the ability to do some work for one of our major employers to look at their corporate headquarters and some property they had available in the Gateway Mid-County area. The map on the left is a drive time map that shows how far you can go in congested conditions in a 30-minute drive time from that development site in Mid-County. And you can see pretty much all of Pinellas County, you can get about a 30-minute drive time in congested peak hour conditions, and a little bit into South Tampa. By 2040, that actually shrinks. And that's 2040 with all the projects we have funded in our long-range transportation plan, including the Tampa Bay Express project, including the Selman Connector over in Tampa on the Gandy Corridor, including the US 19 interchanges. And I'll just click ahead, and I know you can't see these numbers, but within a 5-minute drive time of that site, there's only 833 people living there. Within a 30-minute drive time, it's about 870,000 people in the urbanized area. And that percentage is about 35% of the urbanized area population can get there in 30 minutes. Well, what happens in 2040? With all the transportation projects we have funded that are financially feasible, that percentage of people who can get to that site in 30 minutes drops from about 36% of the urban population to less than 25% of the urban population. We can't get as far as we want to go or need to go. And if we don't have more housing and more people in Pinellas County in the right locations, they're going to find places to live in Pasco County, in South Hillsborough County, in North Manatee County, and they probably will end up eventually finding jobs in those counties, because the commute here is going to get worse and worse. So if we want higher paying jobs, if we want to develop here, we can't just say we can't grow anymore. We can't accept our projections of 60,000 population growth by the year 2040. To me, that's defeat. We need to be looking at 200, 250,000 population growth in this county, and I think it's achievable. I think it's achievable with the right mix of land use and transportation decisions in the right locations. So again, that's it for the geek aspect of this. couple of other observations. We have a lot of talk in this county about the Pinellas Trail and our trail network, and we have a great and growing trail network. The Courtney Campbell Causeway Trail, the Ream Wilson Trail in Clearwater are complements to the Pinellas Trail, and I commute a lot of days to work on the Pinellas Trail. It's wonderful. But it's we have not tapped into the full potential of that trail. The trail is really a linear park, and the connections to adjacent land use and development. I live in Bel Air Bluffs right now, and I can't get from the trail to Largo's emerging downtown that is finally starting to take off on bike. I can get there if I walk up the stairs. So those kind of seamless connections are difficult. That's West Bay Drive. Who wants to ride their bike on West Bay Drive? But what that links to, 1 mile away, is probably the best facility we have in the entire county, which is the Bel Air Causeway Bridge, and then out to the Gulf Boulevard, where we have bike lanes and we have the wonderful beach destination. So a lot of our problem in Pinellas County is not the state highway system. It's not getting from Clearwater to Tampa, although that is a challenge. A lot of our problem is the last mile and the first mile of getting and linking our key destinations. And I think we need to think more in this county about accessibility of destinations as opposed to how fast I can get from point A to point B. And if we have accessibility right, then we have a lot of things working in our favor as a county because we are unique. We have a unique geography, and we're the one county that I can think of anywhere in Florida where there are 15 to 20 to 25 different individual communities where you can live, work, and play within a 5 to 10 minute walk or bike ride. You can't find that in Hillsborough County in too many places. You can't find that in Orange County, where I come from, in too many places. And we need to embrace that distinctiveness of Pinellas County. So regionalism has been something that's been in a lot of discussion lately, and I just want to touch on this for a few minutes. I've been working for many years with FDOT on these issues. Here in this region, everybody is at the table, but like this room, there are many tables. And I found out just recently that the chairman of the Hillsborough County MPO and our chairman of our MPO don't interact on a regular basis. So we had to set up a lunchtime meeting to get to know each other a little bit. And I think there's a lack of trust in the regional process because we've created these structures that are legitimate if you're inside and you know what they're doing and how they're working, but they don't seem relevant if you're not part of that system. And we really have a fundamental lack of clarity in our agency mission, roles, and responsibilities. And that's throughout. That includes all of our agencies, from state to local to regional, because we have tried to fill in these vacuums, and we really haven't had the conversation that we need to have of what your role is as the operator of the bus system, and what our role is as the countywide planning agency, and what DOT your role is as primarily the construction agency to go out and build these facilities and do it smartly and with limited waste. And we have to really work on ensuring that we have the right mechanisms in place to incentivize regional actions. And we don't really have those mechanisms. We have a very conflicting miasma of policies and incentive funds and programs out there that we try to go around chasing dollars, and it's just not very clear. But we're not unique. I did this work for FDOT down in Southeast Florida, and Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade are in a much worse situation than we are in this region, in my opinion, in terms of their different functions and modes. So our initiatives, what we're doing to address some of these issues, we're looking at incentive funds for catalyst projects within this county, such as funding applications by local governments for transformation of our roadways to be better accommodating for all users, corridor and area redevelopment plans to look at housing, land use, and transportation together. And then we've identified our strategic planning and operations topics for three priority emphasis areas over the next 2 years. One of those, enhancing beach community access, connecting workers and visitors to the one resource that we uniquely contribute to our region, our outstanding Gulf beaches, and to deal with the safety issues because we kill and maim pedestrians and bicyclists at a far greater rate here than our urban counterparts. Having a vision for our economic spine, the US 19 corridor, so that the transportation investments we make are consistent with the land use decisions that we enable and make. And the Mid-County Gateway area, where we are working to put together a connectivity master plan to guide growth and development in this important employment center for our region. And we're going to partner with FDOT and our local governments to make that happen. and our Complete Streets program, which I talked about. We are going to be introducing that this year, and I'm hoping our board will agree to set aside up to $1 million a year for construction dollars to advance Complete Street projects, whether it's 54th Avenue North in Lilman, 22nd Avenue South in Gulfport and St. Pete, West Bay Drive, 580 up in Dunedin. There's a number of candidate projects that we can begin looking at to advance those. And then we have to do all this through a lens of resilience and sustainability. And I show an environmental map of hurricane evacuation zones, and that's how most people think of resilience and sustainability. But I like to think of it differently. I think we need to have sustainable decision-making and a resilience to a vision. And we can adapt and we can change, but we have to keep our eyes on the prize. And that means we have elected officials and staff who are committed and are understanding their role and responsibilities in achieving the vision for this great county. So I'm going to leave this up for a minute because I'm a fan of transit, and I believe transit is about the connections. It's about how people connect, and it's about how our communities connect. And I took both these pictures in different environments. So wherever you are, transit is fundamentally about connections, and we need to think about the role transit plays in getting around. But transit is also about the commitments. It's not just the fun stuff of wouldn't a train be nice to attract all those millennials. We have to really look at, square-eyed, how we pay for it from a funding standpoint. This is SunRail's governance, funding for capital, and funding operation agreement with FDOT, and they'll be taking that over in about 4 or 5 years to fund that completely locally. Who are our champions here in this region to carry that forward? SunRail benefited from Congressman Mica. It doesn't have to be at the federal level, but who are our champions to move forward? So I have a few suggestions. One, from a planning standpoint, use accessibility to guide our growth strategy. Let our transportation investments be our land use implementation tool. From a policy standpoint, make statewide pool of funds available for transit implementation so that it's competitive, and require that we sign up to a regional transit vision and that we have some type of governance structure in place for that. I've got one more slide. And finally, from a regional governance and funding standpoint, we need to strengthen the roles of our existing organizations, our TMA leadership group for the Tri-County area and TBARTA. Consider a Dallas-type funding model where people participate based on their ability to pay. And enable a transit surtax for large municipalities so that we can break apart from the gridlock we have with county governments. So thank you, and I look forward to your questions.
Very well done, and that was a lot to report on given the length of time you had, so I appreciate your being so succinct. All right, so remember, only one question, no speeches, and we're gonna let Whit, you just go around and decide who it is that you wanna, and so they'll raise their hand and then you can just call on them.
Sure.
Sprinkle it all around the room.
Hi, anyway, welcome to Tucker Bay. Thank you for your comments. I'm interested in more about the evacuation plans. So we have areas in Pinellas County, specifically South St. Pete, where we have a lot of residents who don't have their own vehicles, and we know that the bridges close when the wind is at a certain level. So what is the plan to get people out so that we don't create another behind door?
Well, that's a great question. And years ago, I worked on the hurricane evacuation plans with TBRPC. And the thing that I remember, and I don't think it's gotten much better since 1992 or whenever, is that there's probably a 32-hour clearance time that it takes to get all the people out of this county who can and need to evacuate. And the reality is that most people, when there's a storm approaching, will not leave 32 hours in advance. So it's a real struggle, and I think we're an incredibly vulnerable county. I think we need to really look at our bridges. We need to look at our surface transportation network through Oldsmar and to the north, and we need to really help educate people about how they can deal with that. But some of that will mean providing more shelter space in Pinellas County and really encouraging people to be prepared. We are on the emergency operations team, and it's a central aspect of what we do. But I don't have a great answer because we've been fortunate and we have not had to face that reality. Yes, sir, Wingate.
I'm Gabe Newton, Kansas State House. First, I want to thank you for mentioning Gulfport, the 28th and the 22nd Avenue. They started the vision of that when I was running for council and got two terms in the law. Question I have for you is, you spoke about regionalism on your slide. How do you see not being competitive when you have one board that's had a lot of governor appointees versus what we represent up here for the electoral process, the elected process where you have citizen appointees, and how do you get on the same page when they get the marching orders from the
Which board are you referring to? Gubernatorial.
When we did our meetings with the PSC board and the Harvard for
right.
being able to merge, that was a
Yeah, that's a really good comment. And, you know, I think that's part of the challenge that we have in this region is that we have different governance structures for our different operating entities. And I left a region, Orlando, where Lynx was the transit provider for three counties. But Lynx also has the largest service area of any transit operator in the country. And that presents some different challenges as well. And Seminole County has threatened to pull out of Lynx. I don't know how many times Osceola County has threatened to pull, because nobody feels like they're getting their due. I think the governance structures need to work for each entity based on the unique culture that they have. The reality of Hillsborough County is that their geography is so different than ours. They have 1 million people in unincorporated Hillsborough County. HART is a different constructed agency than PSTA. It is organized a little bit differently, and so for that reason, it has gubernatorial appointees. I'm kind of an advocate for some level of gubernatorial appointee because there should be a linkage to overall state objectives. The problem that we've had in this state is, from a transit perspective, we've never articulated a clear transit vision or set of objectives. Our transit funding policies generally date to about 1990. And we've never updated them. We're still doing public transit block grant funding the same way we did in 1990. And we've now mandated that transit agencies come up with a vision for their service. Well, that sends an enormous level of confusion between the MPO's role and the transit agency's role. If one's coming up with a vision and the MPO's coming up with a vision, how do you align those visions? So I think it's deeper than just the board constitution. I think it also goes to the funding mechanisms that we've enabled in state law. Yes, sir.
Hey there, thank you. It's David McCaleb, I'm a local surgeon. Some quick facts, since it's new to the county. Citizens have rejected light rail after being educated for millions of dollars in sophisticated political campaigns. Yet public officials still put it on the list of must-haves. My question for you is, when the local and regional authorities respect that the people make a sober, informed choice and decision on not wanting rail in this county, and rather than keep pushing that agenda, show respect for the citizens rather than some contempt for shaming, and take light rail off the agenda? When are government going to take light rail off the agenda and respect the citizens' choice?
Yeah. Well, I will say, first of all, my whole career, I've been very focused on respecting citizen input and really listening effectively to the community. And I think we're starting that conversation now, to have that conversation through our three emphasis areas. I will never say the words, we need light rail. I will never say that. What I will say generally is we need transportation options in this county, and we need to develop those options in a way that works for our communities. And that's the conversation we need to have. So we can't do a predetermined set of answers. We have to have a deep and meaningful conversation. And the reality is, the conversation never stops. You can't stop having the conversation because we're a dynamic county and a dynamic region, and people change. And if we are truly going to evolve as a county and grow again and attract higher paying jobs, which has been uniformly stated as the vision and goal for every local government that I can think of, except for maybe Bel Air Shore and a few very small residential communities, North Reddington perhaps, they're all interested in higher wage jobs and a diversified economy. And the only way we get there is by changing a little bit about how we operate and how we do business. That means developing transportation options. It does not mean that we go in for the CSX line. It does not mean that we have light rail over the Howard Franklin. It means that we think about, from a physically sound perspective, what makes sense and what can the voters support and what can the constituents support and what can the elected officials support.
Can I ask that follow-up question, because I don't think
All right. Hold on, please. At the very beginning of this meeting, I asked for everyone to be respectful and kind and somewhat disciplined. Tiger Bay, though you may be long-term members and remember the old days, we have worked really hard this year to elevate our conversation, our thinking, and the way in which we behave. We do not allow booing, ranting, or anything else. I believe, Dr. Caleb, that Mr. Blanton heard your question. He certainly answered you in a very respectful way.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you for your comments on civility. Your board is welcome and late coming.
Thank you. And I appreciate what you have just said. And I believe that we are embarking on a new opportunity. And it is important that we don't keep on talking about what was. We cannot get stuck in that, and I think that's what Mr. Blanton is trying to say. So please be respectful and be kind. He is certainly trying to be that with all of you. Thank you. Continue.
Mr. Welch.
What great presentation, Ken Welch. Take it to a fantasy world where Governor Scott and President Obama agree to give you authority over transportation in Tampa Bay. What is the project or pilot that you would initiate off of that?
Can I say labor?
No, I'm sorry. That was a joke, really, seriously. You know, there's such a diversity here in Pinellas County. That's a really tough question. You may win the award today. I would say if there's one project that I think we really need to do is I think we need to ensure that we have every viable PSTA bus route operating at a 30-minute frequency or better. Just basic fixed route service, because that's our true weakness in this county for folks who need to get a job and may not have a car available, or like my mother who lived in Lakeland and could not see, had to depend on her daughter to drive her everywhere. We have a number of people here who are getting older or in that situation where they can't drive anymore, and a viable public transportation option that doesn't demean people who use it is a huge missing gap. And it's not one simple project, but that's the one thing I would undertake. And I don't say that because you're on the PSTA board. I really firmly believe that is the one neglected aspect of our transportation system. We've done pretty good overall, but we just have not been able to keep up. Todd, and then I'll come back to you in the back. Yes.
Todd Jensen, for being here. There's a lot of talk about the fledgling driverless car industry and how Uber and Lyft are going to integrate with that. How are you accounting for that in the long-range planning? What effects do you see having in this county?
Great question. I think autonomous vehicles are the vanguard of how we're going to get around for the foreseeable future and maybe a good long time. I welcome that because I've been known to work on a PowerPoint while driving. So that's not safe and not good. What I would say is that we are behind the curve in really incorporating that into our planning documents, but we're beginning to think about what that means in terms of our land development pattern is probably where it happens first. For instance, the amount of parking space that we devote or require on site will probably be the first thing to change. No longer will every development have to have a minimum amount of parking, because driverless vehicles, autonomous vehicles will be able to kind of operate a little bit like an Uber vehicle and come and get you as you respond. So that's one aspect. I think the other is that from the freight industry in particular, we will have much more efficient on-time delivery of freight because those vehicles will be able to operate in sync and draft behind each other and use up much less roadway capacity because of the consistency of their operations. So it does make me question the need for some of the highway capacity projects that we've talked about, but I think for at least for the next 10 to 12 years, it's probably likely to induce more vehicle driving because people will be freed and able to use their time more efficiently. So I think we'll see the spike and increase in vehicle driving, and then over time, that potentially could drop, particularly in the urban core areas. Thank you so much. I said I would come back to the lady back here, and then I'll come over to the left side.
I'm Terry Bryan. I served as the present mayor, here in St. Louis for a transition team on transportation. And I'm glad to hear you address the part about the express bus, because that was one of the things we proposed. But I'd like to know how much have you looked at that plan that we presented, which dealt with the southern part of St. Petersburg receiving very, very poor service as far as transportation. And one of the things were mini service, like mini vans and things like that in areas like Lakewood, Royal Border, Pinellas Point, that hooked up with those other services.
Right. I have just flipped through most of the plans that are in place, so I can't say I've looked at that one in great detail, but I will. We have been talking with PSTA about a downtown to downtown express that would go from downtown St. Pete to downtown Tampa, primarily for workforce development and potentially as a maintenance of traffic when the Howard Franklin and the Gandy Corridor bridges are both under construction, with the Selman on the Gandy Corridor and the TBX project on the Howard Franklin. But connecting to that service is also critical. So we need the feeders, we need the van service, we need a variety of types of transportation options to connect people to those points. And to that point, we are also working with PSTA on something we're calling a transfer area analysis, because think about where most PSTA transfer points are around Pinellas County. They're in the back of a shopping mall. They're across a sea of asphalt or parking to get to your destination. They're in a dark place sometimes. And we don't have a retail or residential environment around those transfer points in general. And so we need to really look at sort of rethinking where we ask people to transfer between one mode and another, or between one bus route and another. So that's part of the strategy there. Yes, sir, and then I'll ask. Go ahead.
I'm Gregory Wilson. I heard you speak very carefully when you were talking about pivoting. I've heard you twice be very clear what you weren't saying. I saw you touch the third rail with respect to municipal taxation. And of course you see how contentious the subject can get here. So my question is, just what kind of political skills does your job call for, and how secure is your employment?
Well, I guess I'll find out. I think Commissioner Long said at the beginning that I was in sort of a honeymoon phase, and maybe that's true. And I think the waters are going to get increasingly choppy as we get more specific in our planning, and we will get more specific. But I am a big believer that you enable communities to do what they want to do whenever you can. And so if you've got a city, let's say Tampa, for instance, that has very clearly voted in favor as a city for different transportation options, and they're unable to advance because the structure in Florida is that counties have all the revenue generating ability, then there's at least logic should say, let's at least look at that option and what does that look like. And Atlanta is now having that conversation in Cobb County and in some of their counties that create a diversified set of projects depending on whether you're in the county or whether you're in a city. I don't think you have to necessarily authorize a municipal tax surtax different than the county. Maybe it's just how you package the types of projects and you bring that to the voters. But we clearly have not had much success doing that. And so we need to rethink any kind of revenue generation model. But I was being a little careful because I said at the beginning of this that I'm very familiar and quite comfortable working in a constrained funding environment. And that's what every MPO director around the country does. And it's a matter of setting priorities. And if we never raise another dime of revenue, we will simply have to set the priorities that we need to set pivot as we can to have a more balanced funding scheme and deal with those consequences. Because every time we say no, we're saying yes to something else. And we need to understand better what that yes is that we're saying to something else. And I'm not sure we've had that conversation. So that's part of the discussion we need to have.
So we're going to take two more questions. And if you could make your questions rather short, and then Whit will have the opportunity to answer them. But we are running a little behind. So two more.
I'll come to you next.
You impressed me as being very smart, with grand knowledge, grand vision, and that's what we do as a planner. But how do you move from the planning to implementation?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, and I think money drives everything. So we need to incentivize people who develop plans at the local, state, or regional level to tap into funding sources that are tied to the plans they develop. And I think that's what I was alluding to earlier about our transit strategy statewide, is that we've never really created those mechanisms that say, if you establish a very clear performance expectation and you're willing to sign up to that, and you've created an organizational framework and a partnership to do that, then that should open up some funding avenues for you. And it should be extremely competitive. The best projects go forward, and they get evaluated against a return on investment standpoint. That doesn't necessarily mean no new revenue, new revenue. What it means is that we carve out and make available pots of money that you can sign up to. And to a large extent, the federal government does that, and we do that in the state of Florida a little bit, but it hasn't been as strategic as it could be. And so I think that's a big part of it, is finding where those dollars come from and responding to that. What I don't like is when, and I think PSTA has been in this mode, is where we go around chasing every possible funding opportunity, and it may not be that that's the thing you would really choose to do. It's just what the money enables you to do. And so that's an important distinction. And I need to go into the very back, and I think this gentleman up here had his hand up.
What's your Dan Arkin Jr. What's your take on the CSX deal that we're going to be deciding on the next year and a half? How does it play out for the region, from Brooksville, Tampa, all the way from Oldsmore down to St. Pete? It's a big decision for a region. What's your take?
Well, I've been on record pretty consistently that the CSX rail line is probably our biggest underutilized asset in Pinellas County. It doesn't carry that many trains. It's poorly maintained, and it's a barrier in our community. Now, I have no idea what the cost is to upgrade those rail tracks to where they can be used for even better freight transportation. That's a big ticket item, and we asked FDOT to fund an evaluation study to understand what the right-of-way acquisition and the maintenance upgrade would be, and the department deferred doing that. Instead, we're doing a regional premium transit feasibility study that will consider CSX as well as some other options, and Hillsborough Area Transit is leading that study with FDOT's funding. So CSX is now out there in limbo. It's waiting for that study to go through. It will be evaluated. I have no preconceived notions of what should happen and whether that makes sense to pursue, because we could be looking at $500 million or more just to maintain and upgrade those tracks for passenger rail, and that may be prohibitive. But if I compare a transit investment in the Gateway Mid-County area and a transit investment in the CSX line, I can tell you the land uses are a lot better suited in the CSX line because they're small blocks, they're redeveloping already, they're close to where people live, and in the Gateway, if you were to bring something over the Howard Franklin, first of all, everybody who works in those office parks is driving a car that they're probably not going to give up to take a bus, and you've got vast amounts of land, so walking anywhere is incredibly difficult. So any investment in the Gateway area also means a fundamental land use change, which is going to take decades, whereas a CSX investment, you're not talking about decades for a land use change. So those are the trade-offs that we have to think about.
Well, thank you for that very lovely in-depth question and answer.